Just kidding. All right. And all the reason why we're all here tonight is to bring up Linda H. from Lompoc.
Linda, an alcoholic. I'm still an alcoholic. Before I start speaking, I would like my sponsor to come up here and read the St. Francis prayer.
Hi, I'm Cindy, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there is our shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen.
Thank you. Linda's still an alcoholic. I want to thank you. Welcome to the newcomers. You know, I was there just 3.5 years ago, and I had a journey that just led me to keep staying in these rooms. I hope you hear something that you keep coming back. My sobriety date is November 29, 2015. The longest I've ever been sober is up to 2 years. Now this going on 4 years, it's like a miracle for me. And it's going to keep that way as long as I keep coming back and staying in service. I was born from an alcoholic mother and a father that was a one-night stand of my mother. So I don't know who my father is, and that story's gone. I do remember when I was 5 years old, and I have two sisters and a brother that passed away about 3.5 years ago from alcohol and diabetes. But I do remember when I was 5 years old, I was sitting at home with my sister that has the same birthday as me, but 3 years difference. And we were sitting at the window and crying because my mother wasn't home yet. Well, turn around, I end up putting my face through the window. I have a scar above one of the eyes. I don't know which one it is because I don't look at my face that close anymore. But I hit my face against the window, and the cops were called because they had to call the ambulance. And my mother wasn't home, so guess what? I went into the system. And I was raised in the system. They took me away from my mother, and that was the last time I seen my mother. And I ended up going into a home that had 60 kids in there. And I was in there for a good, I think, few years before they moved me into a foster home that wanted me. And at that time, my sister was with me through the foster home. They had her in a different place when they took me out of the home at 5 years old. Yeah, and I remember my sister was with me in that foster home, and I think for like 2 years, and then they separated us. And my other sister and brother, they stayed with their dad. You know, because I'm a different father than my two sisters and brothers. So, you know, they had their dad around, but I didn't have a dad, you know. So that's why I was put in the system, because my mother couldn't take care of me because she was an alcoholic. And they seen the things that she did in the house. So when they took me out at 5 years old, they knew that I couldn't go back to my mom's. And about 10 years old, I remember being in one of the rooms at one of the foster homes that I was at, and they told me that my mother had passed away. There was some kind of, I don't know if, what it's called, the authorities. And they came and told me that my mother passed away. So they took us all out of our homes, my group home, the foster home I was in. They took my sister and my brothers, and they brought us all together for that funeral. And that was the only time I got to see my sister and my brothers. And then I remember when we got out of there at that funeral, they had like a little reception. And my sister, okay, the sister that's 3 years different, she's, you know, so if I'm 10, I think I was 11, and my sister would have been 13. I remember my sister and us sitting in a van, and that was the first time I took a sip of beer. And I'm 11 years old, and my sister's, what, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. And she was sitting in a van with a bunch of older guys, right from the reception. And I'm in the van with her, and she said, go ahead, you know, take a sip of beer, sis. And so I did, and I kind of liked it, you know. It wasn't really tasty, but, you know, it made me feel better. You know, I felt like it was helping the pain that I felt from losing my mom. You know, even though I didn't have a mom in my life, you know, it's still not having that mom and dad around, you know. I didn't have it, so I had an empty spot in my heart. And so so that's what happened. I remember that time. And then we're going to jump to when I was I was like 15 or 16. I was 16 years old, because I don't remember a lot from the past. Because I guess I must have blacked it out, you know, from all the, you know, the tragedy that I went through being in foster homes and group homes, being raised that way. You know, I think it was about 16 I was, and I ran away from this, and I ended up going down to San Francisco, and I ended up getting in some trouble up there. You know, they didn't find me. They tried to look for me, the foster home, or I think it was the group home. They tried to look for me. But they couldn't find me because I went to San Francisco. I was in Ukiah, California, and I ran away from Ukiah all the way down to San Francisco. And I got involved with the street life, okay? And I kind of got turned out by a guy that put me on the streets. And, not kind of, but I did. And I was like that for a good year. And then all of a sudden, some friends of mine that were the street girls, you know, they treated me like family, you know, and I felt like family with them, because there was, you know, they were all older than me, and they knew, you know, they knew the streets, they knew how to, you know, handle stuff. And so, and I'm under 18 years old, and they were all over 18. And then all of a sudden, about a year later, all these girls started disappearing. And I don't know if you ever heard of it, but they found 13 body parts in the garbage cans at Dolores Park in San Francisco, and all of those girls were my friends. And it was, you know, and that way I went really through that turmoil, losing all my friends from there. And, you know, and so I got out of that street life. You know, I ended up meeting a guy that got me, you know, he kind of took me traveling around. You know, he sold jewelry. He did business, you know. He fixed up this brass jewelry and sold it as gold. And, you know, he started making me feel secured. Like, I felt secured. I didn't have to be on the streets anymore, you know. So I felt comfortable with that. So I went with them. And, you know, I would be in the car with him, you know, and he'd go out and do business, leave me in the car for the hour. And, you know, and I started using substances, okay, started making me feel better, okay, and the alcohol on top of that, like every end of the bottle, at the end of the bottle would be a stack, you know. So I had both of them in my life. It wasn't just one. I had both of, you know, alcohol and substances, and it, you know, that took me, and I did that for many, many years with him, you know. As a matter of fact, he only drank. He was an alcoholic too. You know, did he admit it or not? No, I don't know, because we're not together. But he was an alcoholic, and I was both. And emotionally, I went through a lot. You know, we ended up having four children. You know, one of them, I'm not sure if it's his or not, but, you know, the first one, I call him my milkman's baby because, you know, I don't know. You know, like I said, I was a street girl at that time, and I got pregnant when I met him, you know, and I don't know. It could have been his, but I don't think so. He doesn't look like, he looks like me. All majority of my two, all four children look like me. But turn around, I end up having a child and being on the streets, and turned around, I had left him for a little while, and I ended up going into a pregnant house to have him because I didn't want to be traveling around with him on the streets, you know. So I went to a pregnant house in San Francisco and ended up having my baby there, and I ended up getting back with him about a year later. And during my pregnancies, I never used or drank, but right after I had him, I was back on. You know, that was also the reason why I would go back, because I had to fill that hole in my heart. I had a big hole in my heart from him, you know, from not having a mom and dad around. You know, my life has been nothing but, it's always been an abnormal life. I never had parents, I never had, you know, my siblings around. You know, I've been in and out of group homes. You know, then I'm 18 years old. That's when I had my first son. And turned around, we end up, when I got back with the dad, we end up getting a place up in Redwood City. I think it was Redwood City. And got my, you know, and then I end up not wanting to have him, you know, because I wasn't ready. I knew that I was starting to get hooked on alcohol and drugs, that I ended up giving him to the foster care. And I had him in foster care for a good 5 years. You know, the reason why it took so long for 5 years is because we would go out and do business, and, you know, well, the jewelry business, that's what I'm talking about, okay? Not drugs or alcohol business, but jewelry business. And the thing is we were, both of us were hooked on something, right? So what we did is when we traveled, we went from Redwood City all the way up to Central Coast. And at the CPS ends up moving my son every town that we stayed in for at least a good 6 months. We would stay in one town, they'd move my baby up, my son up there, but they wouldn't give him back to me. So that's why he was in the system for 5 years. We ended up back in Santa Maria right before my second son was born. We ended up back in Santa Maria, and that's where I got him back. And I ended up getting the job, and, you know, I don't remember where I was working when I got him back, but I ended up getting the job, got a place, and went to court at the Santa Maria courthouse for the youngsters. Mm-hmm. And they turned around and they gave them back to me. But in that meantime, they knew that me and my husband did things. So that's why it took up to 5 years for me to get my son back. But when I got him back on my own. You know, I didn't have a lawyer. I went and showed them that I can do this, and I went through parenting classes, and I went through all the, you know, what I needed to do to get him back. And then I ended up getting pregnant with my son Johnny here. And then, like I said, during the times, every time I got pregnant, I did not use or drink. But as soon as I did, I had to fill that hole in my heart. And even though I had my kids, they couldn't fill that hole, that circle in my heart. They couldn't feel that completely in my heart, you know. Even though, you know, your child is supposed to be the light of your life, they were, but they weren't completely the light of my life because I didn't have the parents to raise me. So, you know, trying to raise my children the best as I could, and, you know, I didn't think alcohol and substances were going to hurt my, you know, hurt me bringing up my children, but it did, because my children, and a couple of them end up turning to the same kind of substances they saw me doing, and the drinking that they saw me doing. But you know what, three of them are sober, and one of them still out there. You know, I went to go see one of my children today that's out there, and it's hard to see him like that, but I can't change him. you know, because the thing is he's got to want to change himself before I change him. So I end up having my son and going after he was born. He was born here in Santa Maria. Okay, I had Marcus in San Francisco, that's my oldest, then Johnny in Santa Maria, and then that didn't stop us traveling again. You know, we still traveled. You know, like I said, I stayed with his dad the 15 years, right? And then we've been married all together for 35 years, but we've been separated this past 20 years. You know, that's one thing I have to close in my life. I have to close that book on my marriage, but I haven't done that yet. And that's something I'm working with my sponsor and talking to her about. But I do want to tell you that after I had Johnny, I was here in Santa Maria, and just my life, you know, I'm so blessed that I have four children. You know, I'm blessed that they're still here, you know, with me and part of my life. But, you know, it's I don't want to get really into detail much more about, you know, I just want to let you know I had my four kids. But I do want to tell you, when I started recovering, November 29th of 2015, that's the day I started, I lost my house. That date I lost my house. I lost my house 6 months before that. And thinking February. Was it February I lost? Yeah, it was February. I had lost my house that I lived in for 10 years. And I'm jumping all the way up to the front because, you know, I don't want to get into real detail. You know, a lot of you heard me speak here before. So I did it that first time I got into real detail. But February 2015, I put myself in detox. Because the thing is my daughter, and she had all right to not want me to see my grandkids for at least 6 months before that. You know, she didn't want me to have my grandkids around me. And I don't blame her. I didn't abuse them, but they didn't need to see a grandmother that was going to be in, you know, stay in her addiction or her alcohol. Like, right? So then turn around. I ended up putting myself in detox. And the first week, I couldn't stand it there. I thought, oh, you know, when you go into detox, I got the idea that I can able to go in there and relax and take it easy and come off whatever I'm coming off of, alcohol, substance, whatever. No, the first night, yeah. But the second night, I was back. I was in meetings. What, all through that detox area, and then they would come out and take me in meetings. And when I went in there, November 29th, I was 350 pounds. And so I kind of pulled it off where they had this wheelchair, right? And I had them wheelchair me to a meetings because I wasn't gonna walk. I didn't feel like walking. You know, when they walked to this by JCPenney's, you're gonna put me in. No, you're not gonna have me walk there all the way to JCPenney. And I'm, you know. So I had to, as soon as the next day, they had me. I told them, come on, you gotta push me in a wheelchair. So they did, and I think they did that for the first week. They pushed me in a wheelchair. And then the second week, they took us in a van, so I was kind of getting blessed, you know? And turned around, that second week, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave detox because I knew that I was going to go back and I was going to sleep. I was sleeping in my son's car. I back it up a little bit. From February 2015 to, June or July, I was in the shelter. I had left the shelter because I couldn't handle the, you know, the rules and people, you know, it was too noisy. So from June or July till November, I was sleeping in my son's car. And guess where I was sleeping? I was sleeping right across the street where I lived in a house for 10 years, you know. And you want to talk about rock bottom? That was like hitting me with a rock, you know. I would get up in the morning from my son's car. On a property that he worked, you know, didn't have a bathroom, okay, right there. So, you know, when people weren't looking, you know, I opened the door and I cop a squat, you know. But that time, I'm telling you, I hit really rock bottom at that time. And so November, when I came in the detox, and I got out December 14th. I even remember the date on this. I got out December 14th. And the first thing I did was started hitting these rooms. I started hitting the 1600 Club, 3 meetings a day. I would come over here. And you know, I couldn't take showers, but once a week at the showers for blessing right there on Pine and Cook and Broadway. There's a church right there. There's showers for blessings. I went over there and I took a shower once a week, you know. But the thing is, I was determined to stay sober this time, you know, because when I first came in, and I came in for my grandkids. I didn't come in for my kids. They wanted me. A few weeks before I went to detox, they asked me. They asked me, especially him. She didn't, because she wouldn't talk to me till I got sober. And I understand that. And I thank you for that. But he kept asking me to come in into the rooms, and I told him no. He goes, there's people in the rooms that have been asking for you. Why don't your mom come in here and get sober? I said, no. I wasn't ready for it. I wanted to still be out there. But then, you know, when I'm sitting out there, when I'm laying in a car right in front of a house that my daughter had, my 3 grandchildren, and I'm waking up and I'm seeing that house, but I'm in a car and that house is still standing there with other people living in it. Yeah, that hurt. That killed me. I knew that I was doing wrong. I knew that I needed to get help. And so I did. So I did. And like I said, the first couple weeks, I came in these rooms. I would go to the Golden Group over here. That was on Broadway, right? Before it hit over here on by the Goodwill, I went over there. That's where I met my sponsor. I met her at the Golden Group. And I didn't phase her too much at first, because I had a sponsor at that time. You know, so I just, you know, I seen her, I would say hi, but I didn't talk to her very much. You know, and I seen a couple other people that I just, you know, and when I would come into these rooms, you know how when they say, we got to collect for the 7th tradition. And at that time, I was still smoking cigarettes, okay? I think I quit a month after I came into the rooms, or 2 months after I came in the room. They tell you not to do everything right at the same time. But the thing is, when I was in detox, they put a patch on me because, you know, you can't go outside and smoke a cigarette. Now, over at this other one in Lompoc, yeah, you could go outside and smoke a cigarette, because I have a sponsee now, and she goes outside and smokes a cigarette. So I don't know what the rules are, why they're so different. But at that time, I couldn't smoke in detox unless I come to a meeting and I have to bum a cigarette from one of you guys, you know? So then turn around. So as soon as they had the 7th tradition, I'd be outside smoking a cigarette. And, you know, I'd stay out there. I'd make a, you know, excuse that I'm going to stay out here, you know. Now that the meeting's halfway over, I mean, you know, what is it, right? So I didn't have the patience to sit in the room for that whole hour, you know, when I first came into these rooms. And it took me about a month. Then I started meeting people, you know, and there was the sponsor that I did connect with, Christian, okay, she got me to ask me to start being a greeter at the door for the speaker meeting, right? And she goes, I want you to start meeting people. I want you to start, you know, getting out of yourself and start meeting people so you can really hear their experience, strength, and hope. Start getting yourself well, right? And, you know, me not being able to take a shower but once a week and doing bird baths in gas stations and stuff, you know, because I was still sleeping in my car. I would come, if you know, when I first came in here, I wore a lot of hats because my hair would be, you know, I couldn't wash it but once a week, right? And, you know, getting out of the car, your hair's like this and like this, you know. So when I wore the hats, you couldn't tell that I didn't take a shower, right? I looked pretty good. I had it all, you know. Like a little brim, but it was like a, you know, different color hats, you know, and I look pretty good. So, that's when I did. I said, yeah, I'll become a greeter at the door. So I started going. I got to know some of you wonderful people in these rooms, you know, and it was hard at first. don't get me wrong, because I'm still going through the emotions. I mean, I was only like a month or two sober, and I'm still going through the emotions. And I just, you know, there was one guy that came in here. I don't know if I don't see him right now, but he would give me a hard time. He was out here earlier, but he would give me a hard time. No, that's not you. But you too. You did too. But, and I took it personal a couple times. And I would tell my sponsor that I had at that time, hey, I got to go. I got to get out of here. You know, I don't want to deal with people's, you know, I know we're all sick when we come in these rooms. But, you know, the thing is, that guy's been sober a while, you know, and I don't want to be here. So, yeah, there was like two or three times I left. And she would call me up and she would tell me, you know, are you okay? And I said, yeah, you know, she was pretty good sponsor. She, you know, she helped me through the first couple months I was here. And let me think. Okay, so I ended up, and I would take the bus, right? If I couldn't walk over here, I would take the bus from over here on Boone and Smith. I'd come up where the bus stops around there, the area. And I think it was over here by Morrison Park, huh? And I'd take it over here by Pine, and I walk around, you know, because I'm still big, you know. I didn't have my surgery for my gastro bypass until the 17th, September of 2017. Okay, so that's like a year and a half, you know. I was still humongous, you know. But turn around, I met a wonderful lady that she was in sobriety. She went through both rooms, you know, the AA and NA. Well, turn around, she offered me a room for rent, and she knew that I was wanting to, you know, get off the streets. And I had an income every month, and I still do with that same income. But the thing is she had offered me a room, and for a whole month, I turned her down. I told her I was too nervous about, you know, how come people are being so nice, you know? Because I'm not used to that. You know, I'm used to the street girls. Yeah, they would be nice. You know, I was used to that kind of, you know, lifestyle. I wasn't used to these people that, you know, had a house and, you know, wanted, you know, to offer me a room. So for a whole month, and, you know, she kept that room open for a month. She said God wanted her to wait for me to move into a house. Her house. So I ended up moving in her house. This was in February. It was right before my birthday, February. Yeah, February 18th. And I moved into her house. And from then on, I would take the bus. And, you know, I did the greeting for a whole year here at the door. And a lot of you know me because I greeted you at the door before you came in the rooms. You know, and this happened from February of 2016 to February 2017. And then I had to give up the commitment because, you know, you got to pass on. You can't just keep, after a year of commitment, you got to pass it on to somebody else, another, either a newcomer or somebody that's, you know, coming into the rooms. And so I did that for a whole year. And, you know, I took the buses. And at, you know, when, like, around 8 o'clock, the meeting be over, right? And the buses don't run after 7, I think 6:30, 7 o'clock. I don't remember. You know, it's been a long time since I've taken a bus, you know. So I would have to find rides home. And I would, nice. That's when more I got to ask to know people in the rooms. Because I would have to ask. And Chucky was one of them. Chucky was one of my rides home. He would give me a ride home and... Remember that, Chucky? And then, he was, that's one of the nice guys in here. And then after that, no, it was innocent. Don't worry, it was innocent. No 13 stepping here. No, that's that'd be called 13 stepping, and that didn't happen. But and then after that, after I moved from her house, the lady that I lived in there for 10 months. So I think it was from February to December, huh? Yeah. because you took me over to, you told me about Yolanda. And so I moved into this other lady's house. I moved out of her house because it was time for me to move on. I had to start, you know, getting myself where I can find my own place. And back it up for a minute, when I lost that house on Boone Street, before I went homeless, I ended up losing my housing because I wanted to stay high and drunk, and I didn't want to look for a house. So I lost my housing. And you know how difficult, once you lose your housing, you have to get back on a list, and it takes years to get it back. Well, my higher power got me back my housing in a year. Within a year, I got my housing back. And I got it, and
that's faith for you.
Yes, it is. And I believe in my higher power very strongly. And turned around. So after I moved out of my the lady that I was living, I don't want to give a lot of names, you know, because that's anonymity. I moved into another lady's house for 3 months, and she let me stay there without paying rent. Okay, at the other house that I stayed at before for the 10 months, I paid $600 a month. But you know what? The thing is I did it, and it struggled. But, you know, taking the bus, I bought bus pass. I got a bus pass to come over here and stuff. You know, I ended up working on my license while I was at that lady's house. And I got my license back. You know, I ended up getting my driver's license. And I bought a car. And so from the lady that lived in Orchid, I stayed with her for 3 months, and I applied. In the meantime, my sponsor that I have now, I had gotten her, I think, like a few months after I moved in our that lady's house, right? Okay, I got my sponsor. So turn around, you know, I changed. I had a couple of different sponsors, but the thing is, I was looking for somebody. When you get a sponsor, you need to look for somebody that you can connect with, somebody that you want what they have, you know, in their sobriety. And this lady, she's dynamite. I wanted her sobriety for, you know, and it connected with me, you know. So I've had her for 3 years now. I think 3 years I've had my sponsor. And so when I was at that lady's house for 3 months and I didn't pay rent, okay, she allowed me to stay at her house. She went and got me dishes for a new place. She got me everything that I needed to start off in my kitchen area, okay? And I'm saying, I think she knew that I needed that kitchen, good kitchen stuff, you know? But turn around, while we were living there, two of the ladies from the rooms went with me to go apply for this place in Lompoc. Only place that I applied for, okay? And we felt it right. As soon as we walked there, they took our IDs. They showed us a place. It felt right. It felt like it was all meant to be. And guess what? That's where I'm living now. And I got that place, and I got it through Section A. You know, and the thing is, I got my Section A back. I've been living there now almost 3 years. I think it's been 2 years. Yeah, going on 3 years. It'll be 3 years in February. Everything happens in February of my month birthday, you know. But when I moved there, I was still having a commitment here at the 1600 Club. I had it on Saturday. And I ended up giving my commitment over to Checky. He took over my commitment at that time. And he still has it, I noticed. But I had that, and then I ended up taking another commitment on a Wednesday over here, and I did it for a whole year. So you know what? I ended up having a budget. You know how much gas is, okay? So living in Lompoc, I took that $20, and this is how much my sobriety means to me, okay? I took that $20, and I each week, so you're talking about four, if there's 4 weeks, that would have been 24 to 60, $80, right? I put that aside out of my income. If it's 100, that's how much my sobriety means to me. If it was 5 weeks, I'd take $100 out of my check, and I put that aside for the gas to come down here every week to open up the doors to the alcoholics who are still suffering. And so that's what I did, and that's what having a good sponsor, You know, everything, I run it past everything to her, you know, from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet, I run everything past her. And so then I turned around and I did that for a whole year. And I had given that up, and I don't know who has it now. What's a guy named Marcos, but I don't know who's doing it now. But you know what? That kept me sober. And what I want to tell you is, you newcomers, you need to get connected in the rooms by either serving coffee, cleaning up the, you know, helping cleaning up afterwards, taking some kind of commitment, because that's what kept me connected to these rooms. You know, if I didn't have a commitment, you know, in the greeting, the secretary to both meetings at different times, I don't think I would have stayed connected, you know, because once you walk out of these rooms and don't stay connected, I have a son that's experienced with that, and God bless it, I've been praying for this boy, and he made it back in the rooms. You know, I've been praying for him. So you know the higher power works. You know the higher power works. And I've been praying for my other son, and you know, it's in God's time, not my time. All I could do is pray and give it to my higher power, and he works on it. You know, so I know it works. In every way. You know, I'm a really miracle of these rooms. You know, if you see me when I first came into these rooms, you would have tripped out until the day I am now. You know, and I don't take it for granted, and I don't forget where I come from. You know, I'm still there to help these other alcoholics and addicts, you know, with their sobriety. You know, so I'm in Lompoc, and I have a commitment up there. I have a commitment. First of all, I was starting a meeting up there when I first got, after I took the commitment off over here. And I started a meeting, and it was called Women on Fire. And I had that for a little while, and I can't think why I gave that up. But I had to give that up for a little while. But then I turned around, and since I don't have a commitment up here now, I have a commitment over there. I secretary a Tuesday meeting and at 12 o'clock at the Little Red House. And I just became an alternate GSR. And you know, maybe one day when the GSR steps down, I'll probably become their GSR. But until then, you know, GSR is when they go to conventions and meetings, that they take the information and they bring it back to their homeroom, and you know, any kind of changes, you know. And I know they just started a young group AA that's going to start in Santa Barbara. It's something like that. But we just it's young adults in AA to help, because we got to get more of the younger generation in here. I mean, you know, it's old timers, that's okay, but you know, the young generation, those are the ones that are really, you know, not wanting to come into the rooms. They think they just come into the rooms with their green card. You know, I'm talking about green card of court cards. Not the green card. So, I just got the commitments up there in Lompoc. You know, I live in a very one bedroom. I got my license. I got a car. I'm not. How do you say it? I thank my higher power every day. I learned how to meditate. I learned how to do meditation in the morning, and I read. I have like six different books, and my kids will tell you. I have six different books. I have it in my room. And if you ever seen The War Room, that movie, well, that's what it took a part of what I do. And I get involved with the church out in Lompoc, Four Square Church. You know, and like I said, I stay connected because I don't want to go back out. And I've seen too many people doing that. And then, you know, and I'm not coming up to my 5 years, I'm coming up to 4 years. But they said 5 years. that's when a lot of people end up going back out. I don't want to do that.
And they don't come back.
And, you know, I don't want to lose my sobriety. I want to stay connected because I got a lot to live for. I got my grandkids. I just had my grandsons. I called her up the other day and I said, can I have my grandsons for the weekend? You know, I didn't really take them for the summer. I took my granddaughter, you know, because I felt part of raising my granddaughter. It's like raising my daughter all over again, but raising my granddaughter and it's...
Praise the Lord.
You know, yeah. It's my higher power that I have my grandkids part of my life. So I got to go and I jumped in the swimming pool with my grandson this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I taught him how to swim. My oldest one, my oldest one to my daughter, my 11-year-old grandson. And I got to teach him how to swim. And we took some laps across the pool and we did it, you know. And he learned how to swim this weekend. I was telling my daughter about that. But, you know, this decision to put myself in detox when I first came into detox for my grandkids was the best decision because after I did it for my grandkids, I learned how to do it for myself. And when I came in these rooms, you guys loved me until I could love myself, you know, and I felt like I couldn't love myself very much because I didn't have that love when I grew up. You know, I had broken families that grew homes and foster homes that were being, you know, taking care of me. And you don't get love from when you're a foster child, really, unless you're in a good home, you know. But these ones were like temporarily foster homes and group homes, you know. So the love that I got in these rooms to love me was to teach me that I can love myself. And today I love myself. I can look in the mirror and I said, you know, I had a pair of jeans and my boots on and I said, you know what, I'm going to dress nice because this is, you know, it's an occasion. Well, I was asked to ask from Brennan and Glenn 3 months ago to come and speak today. I had this date on my calendar, you know, August 25th, and I will be speaking in Fresno in 2 weeks at their meeting, and I'll be going with my sponsor, you know. Yes, and the reason why I would say yes, because I would never say no when somebody offered me an alcohol bottle or substances, you know. So why am I going to say no to change somebody else, try to help somebody else change their lives around? You know, my life is today has been changed, and it's been all the way changed. I'm not the same woman I came into these rooms November 2015. You know, I'm a totally changed, and you know what, I want to be out there to help other people to come into these rooms and to change their lives around. And today, as of 2 days ago, I am a sponsor now of a lady that's in detox. Yeah. And I get to be. And I worked with her a couple of days ago, 2 days ago, and, you know, she talked to me, and we're going to go through her first step on Tuesday. You know, and I'm going to get her through the steps. And, you know, I just pray that I'm able, and whatever I can't comprehend, you know, because no way is the wrong way, I have my sponsor I call. That's my sponsee's senior sponsor now. So, you know, and this couple right here are a big part of my recovery too, you know. And I'm glad to see you, Mimi. I'm glad you came with your daughter and your granddaughter, you know, and I don't remember. No.
Robert.
Okay, and a lot of you were here when I started coming in the rooms. Marianne, Billy, let me see, who else here? Karen, Jim, Tom, Tony, boy. You're doing excellent too. You know, Tony came in after me. Oh, Alfred, right? Rob?
Albert.
It's been a while since I've seen you. I still love you. You're still in my heart. And Alex, happy birthday. And I just want to say thank you for letting me come and speak to you guys. And I hope you newcomers got something out of my talk tonight. Thank you. Yeah.
That was amazing. Let's give Linda another round of applause.